This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. Yeah, if it sounds like I'm in a wind tunnel, that's because I am. Summer has finally arrived in the Ozarks. As I was getting ready to head out today, one of the guys looked it up. He said, yeah, it has something like, it's 93 degrees out there with a real feel of 105. So, yeah, it's a little warm, so I do have the air conditioner on. Hopefully it won't make a whole lot of shh. But anyways, it's Friday today. It's been a very good week. In fact, it's kind of late on Friday. I'm actually getting out a little later than usual. We've been working on this big project that I mentioned last week. All seems to be going fine. We do have a demo for that on Tuesday. But I think we're going to be ready, which is cool. I also have to... Oh, it's episode 14. I have to always... It's episode 14. 14. I do have to tell you that my heart is full at the moment. It's full a lot, but it's very full at the moment. Just not half an hour ago, I got off the phone with a friend. And his dad... died recently, and I had called him, left a voicemail, and he was calling me back, and we were talking, and I can't go into any of the details besides to say that his relationship with his father over the last few years has been nothing short of miraculous. If I could tell you of all the things that he has been through himself and has been through with his father, it is simply, naturally impossible that he would have any relationship with his father, let alone a relationship where he would serve his father in the last few months of his life. And yet he did, and he is richer for it. And I am once again completely amazed, knowing what I know of human nature and behavior, that the divine, the eternal God, whatever you wish to call him, is capable of creating such healing within a heart that my friend was able to do what he did. So that is like very, very cool. Anyways, also in the very cool department, just earlier today I was talking to a buddy, and we had actually gone out and got something to eat last Friday, and he was finishing up a story he had begun with me last Friday as we were eating. He said, you know, he said, I got a little problem, and he said, I'm not quite sure what to do about this, so we talked about it. Basically, what had happened is there had been a feral cat that had moved in underneath his porch. I think it was his porch. We then proceeded to have kittens. So now he has this feral cat with these three feral kittens at his house, and he's trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do about this? And he starts calling all the normal authorities and things that you would think to call. And it's amazing how hard it is to get rid of these cats. Well, how hard it is legally to get rid of these cats. Because he was saying, I think if I remember right, that if he was just going to have them euthanized, that it was going to cost like $150 a cat to do it legally. And so then he asked one guy, he said, so if I just box them up and take them out into the woods, and the guy said, oh yeah, no, that is illegal. He said, because as soon as you box them up, you take possession of them. He said, right now, they're still not your cats. Well, he implied that they weren't his cats, because cats, apparently in the county where my buddy lives, are free to roam anywhere they wish to roam, because no one puts a leash on a cat. So he's in a situation where he has these feral cats wandering around his house or his outdoor yard and on his swing sets and all that kind of stuff. He really doesn't want them there, but they're there. And if he does anything to sort of take possession of them, now all of a sudden he's responsible for them, and he can't find anybody to actually take these cats, you know. And so he's we were talking about it, and you know, we were kind of bantering around a few ideas, and, you know, I really didn't have any good solution for him, but he mentioned at the time, when we were talking, he said, you know, the one thing I haven't done about this is I really haven't prayed about this. I said, well, you know, that's good. That's good. There you go. He told me the rest of the story today, and I am still making a conscious effort not to say, you know, but it's very hard. Anyways, he told me the rest of the story today. I walked by his office. He said, hey, I didn't finish telling you the cat story. I said, no, what happened? He said, well, that day, after we had talked about it, after he decided he was going to pray about it, he said, I prayed kind of the rest of the day. He said, I was praying as I was driving home. He gets home. He looks out in his backyard and he sees these three kittens and mama cat walking towards his back fence. And he's watching them, and they all go out to a specific hole under his fence and go under the fence, and then mama goes under the fence, and he goes out there and does the whole get out thing to them. They go out. He takes some bricks. He puts them in a few of the holes that he knows around the fence. He has not seen them since. So, like, he'd wrestled with this problem for weeks. Thought maybe it was going to end up costing him, like, $600 to do this legally. He decides that he's going to pray about it. And that very evening, he gets home, and the cats are moving out. Great story. I love this stuff. I know some of you are listening and say, well, that's just a coincidence. Okay, well, maybe. But you know, when coincidences happen over and over and over and over in your life, at one point you start thinking, yeah, you know, there's something else going on. I think it was Fox Mulder from The X-Files who used to say, if it's all just coincidence, why does it feel so blankety-blank contrived? Which is a great quote. Even if I can't quote the whole thing because he didn't say blankety-blank. Anyways, speaking of The X-Files, speaking of media, this is a segue. Last week we talked about life in the natural world and interfacing with the natural world. And I had said a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to do that first, because I wanted to talk about the virtual world later. And I think I have this timed correctly, so this is actually going to break into two parts, because there's actually two aspects of this. And I'd like to talk about the first aspect of it this week, and then possibly talk about the second aspect of it next week. The first aspect of this really comes down to the amazing thing that God has done within us as human beings. When you track back to the story of creation in the Bible, there is this interesting phrase there where it says, God made man out of the dust of the earth, and this is my paraphrase, and he breathed into him the breath of life, and man became a living soul. We in Christian circles talk about the image of God, how that man is made in the image of God, and that there is that within man that differentiates him from animals. I affectionately call that the God breath. That there is within us this breath of deity that does not make us deity, but it allows us to share qualities with deity. And one of the things that God, the Eternal, whatever you wish to call him, did in creation is he called those things that were not as though they were. So he made something out of the available resources that he had, and he's really good at it, so he made something out of nothing. We're not quite that good, but he is. Well, one of the wonderful things that he gave us is he gave us some capability to do that. And in fact, we can see all throughout human history how that God has allowed humans to make something out of nothing. And this is, of course, the process of creativity. And so what I'd like to talk about today a little bit is the process of creativity and the imaginary world. What happens in imagination? And what we can learn from that so that as we are creative, we can understand the creative process that's going on in us and some very important things about that creative process. Now then, before I get into all this, please, 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 if you're listening to this, don't let be the first thought that comes into your mind, well, I'm just not creative, so this doesn't apply to me. Because I firmly believe that everyone has some creative endeavor that they should be engaging in their life. You have some epic, some quest, something that you can bring your unique gifts to and make a difference in the world. And we've talked about epics and quests before, about the fact that your epic, your quest, is that thing which only you can do. If you do not do it, there will be a gap in the world. Your quest and your epic is that thing which no one can stop you from doing. And just by way of review, for instance, I firmly believe that I was born to be a writer, to write stories. No one can stop me from writing stories. Okay, sure, maybe I'm never going to be a best-selling author. Maybe my books aren't going to sell millions. But that's just fine, because my quest and my epic is not to sell millions of copies of books. My quest and my epic is to write stories. Or write books about what I've learned about life, and hopefully that will be a help to someone else. So, please, as we're talking about this, don't just kind of check out of this conversation just because you think, well, I have nothing to offer here, I'm not creative. Because I firmly believe that everybody has something to contribute. So whether it is painting, or writing, or composing, or inventing, or crafts, or, you know, no matter what it is, we all have something that wells up in us from the God breath that causes us to be creative. And we should enjoy that creativity and give it an outlet. Because I believe that that creativity comes directly from the God breath. Now then, the thing of it is that creativity is still being manifested through our minds. It's still being manifested through our existence. And our existence very much is intertwined with the flesh, the carnal nature, the ego, within each of us. And so it should not surprise us at all that expressions of creativity in the world would have ego, flesh, carnal nature involved with them. And in fact, it should not surprise us that there is a huge spectrum of this, everything from completely flesh-driven to almost completely spirit-driven. I think it takes very, very, very special circumstances to actually get something that's completely spirit-driven. But it doesn't really take any special circumstances at all to have some flesh component in there somewhere. I got really tickled the other day. I was reading an article on the internet that they had found the earliest known fertility symbol. It's this little carved statue of this woman with these huge breasts and huge sexual organ. And I'm looking at this thinking, yeah, some guy's over in the corner carving this, giggling. People he's showing it to are giggling. You know, because it is, oh, see, I did it, you know, again, sorry. Because this is his expression of his creativity, but instead of doing something normal, he had to give this thing huge breasts. And that's what we're talking about. I mean, that type of thing has gone on for year after year after year. And I mean, if you wish to push the spectrum all the way over to the flesh side, obviously, the flesh side of the spectrum is pornography. Or things that appeal only, as the legal term would be, to the prurient interest. I remember one time years ago when I had first started traveling, I think it was for the music notation system that I wrote. I ended up in a hotel and being a curious young man, I turned on the adult movie section because I had never watched this stuff before. And I know some people would say, "Oh, don't do that," which, okay, you definitely have to know who you are. And I am not, please do not stop this tape right now and say, "Phil is suggesting we watch porn." I am not suggesting we watch porn. I turned it on for about 5 minutes and I shut it off. Not because I felt any huge conviction in my spirit. I watched 5 minutes of it and I thought, this is terrible. It's not written very well. The acting stinks. The camera work is awful. And the lighting is bad. Thinking, why would people watch this? Well, of course, there's only one reason that really people watch porn. So that's an example of what's all the way over on the left side. But there is certainly all kinds of examples of creative endeavors that fall all along the spectrum. We have a little game at our house that we play, and it's called Director's Day. And as we're watching the movie, you know, we wait to see when we get to Director's Day. And then we all smile and nod and go, Director's Day. And that's about the point we pick up the DVD and start fast-forwarding. But we'll talk more about that next week, maybe. Depends on how the time goes here. But anyways, Director's Day is this. Director's Day is that day when the director decides that he is going to spend his entire day looking at whatever he finds appealing. Now, at first blush, you would think that that would normally just be very attractive women in various stages of undress. And we'll talk about one of those instances soon. But it comes to mind that, what was it, the second Batman movie probably had a lot of director's days in it. It was the second or third Batman movie that there were just a whole lot of close-ups in it of Batman and Robin's posteriors. And as it turns out, I think the director was actually gay, and so he was... If I've got this wrong, I apologize right now, but I remember it was sitting in the movie theater, I think, watching this movie and going, okay, I just really don't need to see another close-up of these guys' posteriors in latex. You know, thanks. I got the picture here. Some of us affectionately started calling the movie Buttman and Robot, but anyways... So, you know, it can go both ways. There obviously is a director's day whenever you have a police movie or an investigative thriller or a guy hunting for his daughter or whatever. And sure enough, sooner or later, he has to go to the strip club to interview somebody. It's like, oh, here we go, director's day. Okay, obviously... In that instance, there are all kinds of ways to shoot that scene or put that scene somewhere else. But the director doesn't want to put that scene somewhere else because he wants to spend the day in the strip club. Telling the strippers, yeah, hang from the pole and like drop down some more of that. That's great. What is sad about creative endeavors that utilize other people and then have components of flesh is that the experience can be humiliating for those who are participating in it. I remember several months ago, Entertainment Weekly identified Alice Eve as a breakout actress because they said, you know, I've got to quit saying, you know, they said her performance in Crossing Over is just amazing. It's so raw and so vital. You know, they're going through all this stuff. And I just said, you know, again. What was really interesting is after they complimented her on the great raw performance that she had done, they quoted her. And she had the following quote. Let's see if you consider this ironic. She said, what you see on the page is a piece of dialogue. And then, quote, she drops her robe, said Eve. It's only on the day of filming that you realize that nudity is not just a four-word sentence. It's the predominant thing. You just want to cry because you're naked and there's five men in the room. So here is this beautiful young woman. She reads through the script. She hits this little four-word sentence. She drops her robe. I'm just getting onto my gravel drive here. She drops her robe, and she goes right on. She doesn't think much of it because she's not in that mode of thinking that the director is really going to push the flesh side of it. It just skips right out of her mind, and then all of a sudden, she's on this movie, she's being paid. Now it's time to do the scene. The director has all sorts of options for how to shoot this scene. And instead of shooting that scene with all sorts of options, what does he do? He says, why don't you just take off your robe and let's really get the visceral feel of this because that'll make it more like art. Okay, right. So now she spends the entire day naked with five guys in the room. Why? Because it was the only way to make the movie as good as it was? No. It was because the director wanted to have a director's day. I'm getting my mail. So how does this work out in our lives as creators then? Well, in my mind, how this works out in our lives as creators is that we have to be cognizant of the fact that whenever we are in a creative endeavor, there will always be the chance to have the spirit manifested or have the flesh manifested. Frankly, when I first started writing, I wrote fairly generic, you know, just plot stuff. Not much character development, not much analogies. But then as I started digging down in and started getting more serious, and I really wanted to kind of beef up the scenes and really make them gritty and all this kind of stuff. And in the middle of beefing up these scenes and making them all gritty, frankly, a couple of the scenes that I had written got a little sexual. And I was telling my mom about my book, and she said, oh, Philip, I'm backing into my garage. She says, oh, Philip, I like to read your book. So she reads this book, and I mean, she is just shocked. And it wasn't like bad, but, you know, it was enough that it shocked her. And I went back, and I tore all that stuff out. And it has been my quest in life to write books, to write stories that don't rely on sexuality, you know, sexually explicit scenes, that do not rely on profanity, that do not rely on the cheap, easy emotional hit, but actually tell a story and tell it well without that stuff. Because I don't want my creative endeavors to have a high flesh component. And part of that is I don't want to, in my creative endeavors, encourage behavior that is flesh-driven. I had a friend once who was telling me about, who had read an earlier draft of one of my books, and she was talking, and I'd sent her the new draft, and she said, yeah, you know, I kind of like the other one better. I said, I understand. Some of that was because it was thicker and there was, you know, the plot moved slower. And I just said, you know, again, this is really hard. But she also mentioned at one point, I was telling her about the stories that I was going in and what each of the stories was about and what the philosophy was behind them. And she said, you know, aren't you ever just going to write to entertain people? And I said, no, absolutely not. And she said, well, why not? You're great. Right. Just entertain me. I said, I'm not just going to write to entertain. Everything that I write is going to be about something. Because if all I'm doing is to write to entertain, that can be more easily misused on the other side of the equation, which is what we're going to talk about next week. How do we behave as consumers in the imaginary world? But we'll talk about that next week because I'm actually in my garage. So all I would encourage you to do is to recognize that when you are in, first of all, get in a creative endeavor. And second of all, when you are in that creative endeavor, just be cognizant of the fact that your flesh is always going to try to push you to put more flesh influence into those creative endeavors as opposed to spirit influence in those creative endeavors. And the reason that it's doing that is it's trying to get its message out. And I, for one, want to try to be a person that restricts the outflow of the message of the flesh and increases the outflow of the message of the spirit. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. And now I just have to find the little remote control button so I can push. Oh, hey, there it is. It fell down. I couldn't find it. Have a great weekend.